So, first a few announcements. So I did have the heart to assign homework 5 on the day of the term exam. So it got pushed a week later or so, almost a week later. So homework 5 will be on the web by midnight, and it will be due about 10 days later. Second, the term test will be returned at 2:55. Somebody should stop me if I'm still talking and if I fail to notice that it's time to return the term test. Read along as usual, Mancris, this time is 26 and 27. And the goal for today is to talk about compactness. We're still talking about compactness, but specifically we will have a complete characterization of compact sets in R and in Rn. Well, possibly it will run over a little bit and we'll have to wait until Thursday, but that's the current goal. And also we want to prove the so-called maximal value theorem. Again, when we get to it, I'll state it. But let me start with a few reminders. So a topological space X is called compact if every open cover thereof, so if you cover it by a collection of open subsets, then you can find some finite subcollection which still covers X. So if every open cover has a finite subcover, and the condition is quite mysterious, and the only thing I can say about it is get used to it. You know, you learn it, you eventually get used to it. You work with it, eventually it becomes a part of you. And we've started using it. So first of all, we've shown that every continuous function on a compact space is bounded. So first of all, by saying bounded, I mean it's real valued. Otherwise, I wouldn't know what it means to be bounded, or at least I didn't define what it means to be bounded. So if you have a real valued continuous function on a compact space, then there is some value m which is bigger than all the values of that function. So that was a theorem in 157, I believe, or 137, whatever you took. And here it is, vastly generalized to all compact spaces. The only problem is that at the time that we've proven this theorem, we didn't even yet have a single example of a compact space. Sorry, except for finite spaces, for which the theorem is empty. But then we did prove that the unit interval, the closed unit interval, is compact. And therefore, every other closed interval just as well. So, therefore, we already know that every continuous function on a closed interval in the real line is bounded. So, again, my goals are to fully understand compactness in R and in Rn, and to prove the maximal value theorem. So, more specifically, I will want to show that a subset of Rn is compact if and only if it is closed and bounded. In fact, some of you might have seen this as the definition of a compact space set. So when you talk about about the topology of Rn, sometimes you just define compact to be closed and bounded. Okay? So for us, this is the definition, and closed and bounded will be a theorem. Okay? Anyway, so we'll sort of get there in a, with a few lemmas or sub-theorems, if you wish. So the first theorem is the following. So theorem, a closed subset of a compact space is compact. So for example, a corollary from that would be that if you have a closed subset of the unit interval, it will be compact. Okay? In fact, maybe first of all an example, you know, the everybody's favorite compact subset of the unit interval is the Cantor set. The Cantor set. So for example, the Cantor set C, which at some point we've shown is closed, is compact. The reason is that it's a closed subset of something which we've already shown is compact. Okay? In fact, yes?
A clarification, is that closed in the compact space or closed in the parent? Oh, wait, no.
There is no parent. There is a compact space. You know what? Let's give it a name, X.
All right. I keep forgetting that.
Okay. You know, maybe I'll state the corollary before even proving the theorem. And the corollary is that if you have a closed and bounded subset of R is compact. My goal is to show that a subset of R is compact if and only if it is closed and bounded, but at least we start with closed and bounded is compact. Proof? Well, if it's bounded, it means that it's a subset of some interval. The interval would be compact, and being a closed subset of an interval of a compact set, it is compact as well. Yes, what's the question?
Oh, so the closed subset takes subspace topology, right?
Of course, always. Okay. The corollary has just been proven. The proof is too short to be written. And let me now prove the theorem. Sorry, a proof of the theorem. Proof of the theorem. So, again, let me start with a picture. Here is the big space, and it is known to be compact. Suppose you have some subset of it. The pictures always look the same, but it, you know, because I have a limited ability to draw. But, you know, it's still something. They're still worth making, okay? So here is F, a closed subset of it. Closed means it contains, it's essentially, pictorially, it means that it contains its boundary. Okay, so the formal definition is different. So I claim that F is compact. Well, you'll have to give me an open cover of F. Well, here is an open cover of F. I have to find a finite subcover to show that it is compact. Right? Well, take that open cover you had for F, add to it the complement of F. The complement of F, F complement, call it U, is open. So the old open cover, along with U, covers everything. So there is a finite subcover. That finite subcover, it's completely irrelevant. U is completely irrelevant for that finite subcover, when restricted to F, is a finite subcover of F. And it's completely irrelevant whether that finite subcover contains U or does not contain U, because U is just external to F. Okay? So that's the scheme, but let's write it in detail. So proof of theorem, let U, where U is just some collection of sets, U sub alpha, be an open cover of F. I guess I forgot to say, I should have named, you know what, let me name it here. A closed subset F of R is compact. Sorry, I'm proving the theorem, not the corollary. So a closed subset F of a compact space is compact. Okay. So let U alpha be an open cover of F. Now, each U alpha is open in F. Meaning, so find, well, if it's open in F, it means that it's the intersection of F of an open, it's the intersection with F of an open set in X. So let find these open sets that are the, for which these intersections are the U alphas. So find U alpha prime, which are open in X, and such that U alpha prime intersect F is equal to, U alpha. Then let, again, I want to make an open cover of the whole thing, so I take these U alpha primes, which are now open, and also the complement of F. So let U prime be the collection of all U alpha primes along with the single entity U, which is the complement of F. Okay? Then U prime is an open cover of X. Indeed, these sets are all open. This set is open, being the complement of a closed set. The union of all of those contains F, and this gives you F complement. So altogether, you have everything. Okay? So, by compactness of X, there is some finite subcover of U prime. And let me write this finite subcover. It will be something like the collection of all U alpha I, where I runs from 1 to some finite number n. And then maybe, or union, possibly, so this is a bit informal, possibly union with U, with F complement. So in other words, the finite subcover is either just this union, the empty set, or this union F complement. I don't care. Okay? Call this finite subcover, what should we call it? U double prime. Okay? Then I claim that the U alpha I's, sorry, it's U alpha primes, right? If I want to cover X, okay? Then I claim that U alpha I, I goes from 1 to n, cover S. And it's a finite subcover of the original cover. So F is compact. Indeed, the union clearly, if you take all the sets of U prime, so if you take the collection of all sets U inside, or you know what should I call it, V inside U prime and intersect each one of them with F, it covers F. So this collection covers F because the V's cover everything, and if you intersect them with F, they cover F. But this collection, but this is exactly U double prime. Because if you take the U alpha I prime and intersect them with F, you get the U alpha I's. This is what is written here. And if you take F complement and intersect it with F, then you get the empty set, so you may as well throw it away. So in fact, this is exactly U double prime, maybe with an added empty set, which can be removed, because it doesn't change anything in as much as covering is concerned. Are you with me?
I don't think this is correct, because these sets are all intersecting F, but U prime, U double prime are open sets in X.
Oh, sorry, this was the usual, the same, I meant U double prime. I mean, take this, and now it's fine. Is this okay now?
They're still not the same. So this set is not the same as U double prime, because you start intersecting.
It's not U double prime. I take V's in U double prime. I take any one of the sets appearing here and intersect them with F.
Right. This set is not exactly equal to U double prime, because they're intersecting.
Did I say that this is U double prime?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
I said this is that. This is not, and this is exactly what we wanted, sorry. This is exactly the collection of the U alpha I's.
Yeah, this is
right. Okay, sorry, you're right. Okay. Sorry, I should have fixed my camera in advance. But I took some Halloween pictures and the camera was set differently. I think it's okay. Okay. So, this theorem is almost if and only if, okay? So the next thing I want to show you is that if you have a compact subset of a well-behaved topological space, then it is closed. So it's almost if and only if. So theorem. Is a compact subset of a well-behaved, and by that I mean Hausdorff, T2 space X, then C is closed. Okay? So before proving it, corollary. A subset of R is compact, so it's not yet R to the n, we'll get to R to the n later, but a subset of R is compact if and only if it is closed and bounded. So I guess let's start with the proof of the corollary. So proof of corollary. So let's start with this direction. Suppose it is closed and bounded. Well, this I've already shown. If it's closed and bounded, it's a subset of an interval, of a closed interval. So it's a closed subset of a compact set. So it is compact. So this was already done. And the other direction is an immediate corollary of that. So let's see. If it is compact, then it is closed because it is in a T2 space, right? So if C is compact in the real numbers, it is closed by the theorem above. And now let me ask you, why is it bounded? Yes?
Because there's a finite, any covering can be reduced to a finite subcovering, and that thing is bounded, that covers the set.
No, because the covering itself, every single set of the covering is open but could have been unbounded. So even a finite collection of unbounded sets would still be unbounded. Over here, I don't know.
Could you look at the maximal value theorem of the function f of x?
Yeah, which f?
Equals x.
Yes, exactly. So this is sort of a clever use of the bounded value theorem. So it is bounded because the identity function, f of x is equal to x, when you restricted to C, okay, so if you look at the function f of x equals to x and restricted to the compact set C, it must be bounded. But to say that it is bounded just means that the points of the set C are bounded. So it's a little bit of a clever use of the bounded mean value theorem, of the bounded value theorem. Sorry. Anyway, so now let's prove. Our theorem, so proof of theorem, so again let me start with a schematic proof. So I have my set C, okay, and I want to show that it is closed. So I start with a point outside of it, and I want to show, well, I guess I want to show that its complement is open. So I want to show that if you have a point outside of it, I can find the neighborhood of that point, which is disjoint from C. Now, this is locally true, because my space is Hausdorff. What does locally true means? It means for every point of C, I can find such a neighborhood, right? For every point of C, the space X being Hausdorff, I can find a neighborhood U sub X. So for if this is Y, so for every point in C, I can find a set U sub X, which is disjoint from some neighborhood U sub Y of Y. And then I use the usual, the same general principle of compactness. What is locally true sometimes becomes globally true. I mean, if you know how to globalize, I mean, if you know how to add things together, if you know how to combine things. So basically, you do it for one set, you do it for another, you do it for one point, you do it for another point, and you need only finitely many of these. So eventually, you'll get finitely many U sub X's that cover C, and the corresponding finitely many U sub Y's that are disjoint from them. Sorry, not U sub Y. It's a neighborhood of Y, but it's related to the point X. It comes from the point X. Y is fixed, so I should call it V sub Y. V sub X. Sorry. So anyway, if you take the intersection of all of these V sub X's, it will be disjoint from the unions of all of the U sub X's. And it's still an open neighborhood of Y. So that's the strategy. So let's now write it. So, pick some point Y which belongs to C complement. Sorry for the funny notation. We want to show that Y has a neighborhood which does not intersect C. Okay? Now, by T2, for every point X inside C, we can find a subset U sub X. Sorry, we can find open sets, open and disjoint subsets U sub X and V sub X, such that X is inside U sub X and Y is inside V sub X. So again, the reason for the funny notation calling it V sub X rather than V sub Y is because Y is fixed and X changes. So for any given X, I get a different pair of sets, U sub X and V sub X. So I call them, so X has to be reflected in the name, not Y. Okay. By compactness of C, well, okay, first of all, if you look at the union of all the U sub X's, it contains C. Because each X in C is in one of the U sub X's, is in its own U sub X. So this union contains C. So I can find X1 up to Xn. So find a finite subcover such that U sub Xi still cover C. And then I claim that the union of all the U sub Xi's is disjoint from the intersection of all the V sub Xi's. So the union and the intersection both go as I goes from 1 to n. So my claim is that this intersect that is equal to the empty set. Indeed, if you had a point in this intersection, then it would in particular be on the left-hand side. So if you had some z in the intersection, it would be in some u sub xi. Say it would be inside u sub x3. But if it's in u sub x3, it is not in v sub x3. So it's not in the intersection on the right. So it cannot be inside the intersection of the two. Okay? So these two are disjoint. And then, so, the set V, which we have just written here, so it's the intersection of all the V sub xi, is a neighborhood of Y. Well, each V sub xi is a neighborhood of Y, and if I intersect finitely many neighborhoods of Y, I still get the neighborhood of Y. Disjoint from, or disjoint, do you say disjoint from or disjoint of? Disjoint of, right?
From.
From? Okay. So disjoint from the union of the U sub xi's, which in itself contains contains C. So Y has a neighborhood inside C complement. So C complement is open because I've shown that any Y in the complement of C has a neighborhood in the complement of C. So C is closed, and we're done with this proof. Okay? So I guess the corollary is now proven. So a subset of R is compact if and only if it is closed and bounded. I want to draw your attention to the fact that we've actually proven something nice sort of within that story. Namely, this fact taken on its own is a nice fact, and let me tell you why. Okay? So let me remind you that at some point we talked about separation axioms, and we discussed T0 spaces and T1 spaces and T2 spaces and T3 spaces. And then we went on to T4. But anybody remembers what T3 is? Yes?
Disjoint, so you have a closed an open point and a closed set have open sets around them that are disjoint.
Right. Okay? So, a reminder, a space is so-called T3, or I guess it's also called regular, whenever F is closed and X is a point not inside F, so inside F complement, then you can find, so then there exist U and V open in X such that, of course, disjoint, so U and V intersection is equal to the empty set, and F is fully contained in U, and the extra point X is inside, you know what, sorry, I just realized if I want to keep my notation the same as in here, maybe I should call this extra point Y. So the extra point Y is inside V. Okay? So, if you look, so it's not quite a corollary of what we have proven, but it's the corollary of the technique of the proof. So we have, within our proof, we have also proven, we have already or essentially proven the following theorem, that if X is compact and Hausdorff, then it is T3. And by the way, I think one of your homework problems will be to show that it is also T4. Okay? But proof, well, first of all, okay, so proof, and I will not say, I will just say it without writing it. So suppose you have a closed subset F. F is compact because it's a closed subset of a compact set. So it is compact, and suppose you have Y in its complement, then you're precisely in the situation that appears here. Run this proof in exactly the same way, and you'll get two sets, V and U, and V is a neighborhood of Y, and the union of all the U's contains F, and they're disjoint. So you got exactly what you wanted. Okay. I don't believe we will have enough time to deal with Rn, so at least let's talk about the maximal value theorem. And the maximal value theorem has a generalization. Well, at first it doesn't look like a generalization, but it is. So, theorem. A continuous image of a compact space is compact. So this is the Wardy formulation, and now let's rewrite it in formulas. So in other words, if F is a function from X to Y, is continuous. So if you have a continuous function between topological spaces, and X is compact, and X is compact, does it follow that Y is compact? Definitely not. Okay? The function F could map all of X into a single point. Okay? The function F doesn't see. It's possible that the function F will not see most of Y. So there is no reason in the world why knowing something about X and the function will tell you something about the parts of Y that X doesn't even see. But that's not what I'm asserting. I'm asserting that the image of a compact space is compact. So then, in this case, I'm not asserting that all of Y is compact, but only F of capital X, meaning the collection of all values of F of X, where X is a point in capital X, is compact. Okay? Now this is a reasonable assertion. At least I'm not asserting anything about things I cannot see. Okay? But a corollary. So corollary is the maximal value theorem, the way it was stated in earlier analysis classes that you took. So corollary, if F is a function, so I'll state it less generally than I could, okay, but it's clear that you could generalize it. You know what? No, I'll state it a little bit more generally. So corollary, if F is a function from X to the reals, is continuous. So you can think, if you want, that X is the unit interval, or in fact, any closed interval. Okay? And X is compact, so any closed interval is compact, so it's fair to think of X as a closed interval. Then F is bounded. Well, this you already know. We've already shown that. And if M is, well, if F is bounded, then it has a supremum. So if M is the supremum of F, then M is really a maximum of F. Then there exists some point x0 inside x, or if you wish, inside your closed interval, such that f of x0 is equal to m. Okay? So a continuous function on a closed interval attains its maximum. And this is the so-called maximal value theorem. So here is the proof of the corollary from the theorem. So I already know that f of x by the theorem, f of x, the set of all values of f, is closed. Sorry, is compact. Is compact, and as it is a compact subset of the real numbers, it is closed. So, closed and bounded. Call this set Y. Let Y be f of x. So it's the collection of all values that f has. So it is closed. It is a property of closed set. So, and I believe this property you have seen before, so I will not prove it. So aside, if y is closed, well, and bounded, then the supremum of y is inside y. Is a member of y, yes?
So how do you prove this theorem?
I'm leaving it as an exercise. I believe you can do it, yes?
Does this hold, does that hold for a greater than r, in rn?
If it's not Rn, then the word supreme, if it's not R, then the word supremum does not make sense. It would have to be an ordered set to have a meaning for supremum. Okay, now it is probably true in a higher generality, so there are more ordered sets in which this is true, but I don't want to bother. Basically, the point is that, well, you know what? I'm not sure I want to. You know what? If you, all I'm saying is that if you have a subset of the reals, then its supremum is the least number that bounds it. So, which means that if you go epsilon to the left, you can find elements of the set. So you can find elements to the set at this epsilon and at that epsilon and at that epsilon. But the set is closed, so it must contain the limit of these points. Therefore, the supremum itself is inside the set. So, anyway, if the supremum of y is in y, it means that the supremum of f, the supremum of y being just the values of f, sorry, it was lowercase f. So the supremum of f is inside the set of values of f of x, but that's exactly what I claimed, right? The supremum of f is a value of f, so it means that there exists some point whose value is that supremum, QED. And I don't think I have time to prove this theorem, even though it's really truly easy. So it will wait until next time, and I want to say a few words about the term exam. Let me just... 55. Already the handout that I gave about the term exam, the results were very polarized. As I said, the consequences, the way I interpret it is written here, you can read it for yourself. I just want to highlight two points. One point is that problems with writing are problems. Okay, if you have a problem with writing, so you cannot sort of tell yourself, I knew all the solutions, but I didn't write well. Okay, if you didn't write well, you have a problem, and that problem will recur, and you must fix it. It's a problem of equal value to the problem, I didn't know how to solve the problem. Okay, if you, again, things that you know how to do, but you don't, basically things that are entirely and inside you and you cannot share them with the world are meaningless, don't exist. Okay? So you really have, if you have a writing problem, you really have to figure out a way to solve it. And the second comment is that mistakes in grading always happen. Don't be surprised if it happened on your exam. Just come and get it fixed. So the procedure to get it fixed is to first talk to the person who graded the problem in which you think there is a grading mistake. So it's either me or David, and only if you cannot agree with David, you can talk to me. You have to talk to me. Okay? So that's the order. You must start the appeal process by Thursday, November 11, so by 10 days from today. If you don't complain within 10 days, your complaint will not be heard. Okay? And any comments, anybody else wants to make any other comment before I return the exams? Yes?
So the average is high, so will bell curve down?
Sorry?
The average is high, so will bell curve down?
I have not thought about the final grade yet. Okay, can you turn off the...
Yeah, sure.